Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking chasing returns, free refis, and ridiculous Ramsey rants.
Yeah, dude. In fact, we are going to talk about the Dave during our episode today.
Yeah, I almost went with wretched instead of ridiculous. You can go either way.
Wretched, yeah. Ridiculous feels a little more accurate.
Ratchet.
Well, we do have a bunch of different personal finance news to get to. These are stories that we think are going to be most important when it comes to your personal finances. But, dude, before we dive into the stories, have we talked about the Companion Pass, the Southwest Companion Pass recently?
It's definitely been featured on the show at different times.
Okay, so I don't think we've talked about, though, how I have gotten it, or specifically Kate's the one. She's actually the one who has the control over who gets the companion pass.
Yeah, I was going to say, has she named one, and am I up for grabs?
Maybe. You are able to change who your companion is multiple times a year.
Can I just say, the companion pass, Southwest Companion Pass, if you live in a Southwest city...
It's the best!
...is one of the coolest possible travel perks because you're able to, like you said, choose your companion and you can change it on occasion.
Well, and unlike other airlines, it is a free pass to fly not just one time, but an unlimited number of times.
It's one of the sickest deals in travel that few people know about.
Like, literally, you're flying for free. You just have to pay taxes and, aeronautical fees or something.
September 11th security fee is like $5.60 or something, yeah.
Okay, so the reason we are bringing this up, aside from the fact I guess we haven't talked about it, or talked about the fact that I was able to snag it, is the fact that now is the best time to apply for a Rapids Reward card. Because the idea is that you get that card now, but you start racking up those charges at the beginning of the year. You want those to hit in the next year, 2024, because once you get that companion pass, it's good for the remainder of that year, but then also the entire subsequent year as well. So you're looking at close to 2 years of being able to fly anywhere with a companion for free.
Just timing it right.
It is huge.
An extra like 11 months of having that free travel for your companion.
Exactly.
And we just
now is the time.
And if you're interested to know how to get it, how to do exactly what Matt did, well, you can go to howtomoney.com and check out our recent article on that. We'll also link to it in the show notes for this episode. But it is one of the most underrated travel benefits that few people talk about. We talked about it with Lynn Mettler a little bit back when we talked about how to fly your family around for
it's
free.
The best way.
This is truly the best way to get free travel. And at the same time, you're able to also get that free travel even when you spend points for your ticket. So since you're racking up a lot of points by getting those credit card sign-up bonuses, you can both kind of essentially travel free for a lot of the next couple of years in all likelihood.
For a long time, and those points do not expire. And one of the key catches is the fact that you are able to get that 135,000 points because you're also able to open a business rapid rewards card, and way more folks qualify for that than you actually would would think.
Details in that article, but yeah, you're right. A lot of people think, oh, business card. Oh,
no, most people get deflated. Do qualify, and we explain it all in that article. Yep. So yeah, we'll make sure to link to that.
All right, but let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the Friday flight. A quick sampling of stories
we found
interesting this week. Let's start off talking about investing and the S&P 500, the stock market as a whole, but the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ in particular as well. They went into correction territory for a hot minutes. But very quickly, things changed on a dime, and the market charged back up something like 7%+ over the course of just 2 weeks. It might have been more like 8 or 9%, and including a great week this week thanks to better than expected inflation numbers. We saw that kind of the CPI number go down to 3.2% year over year. We're actually seeing prices in some categories going down, which is welcome news for consumers. But the Wall Street Journal published an article about how this recent surge is getting investors excited. They're like, ooh, market go up? I want in on this. And so it prompted them to funnel more money into stocks. Basically, they don't want to be sitting on the sidelines while the market experiences a surge. And I totally get that. But the problem with this sort of mentality, Matt, we talk about it all the time, is attempting to chase returns, right? It's that you tend to be behind the curve when you take this tactic. You're often missing out on the bulk of the gains. I missed out on that 8% surge. I don't want to miss out on the next surge. But you got in, maybe, sadly, at not the best time. And it makes me think of investors in the ARK fund, Cathie Wood's ARK fund, this innovation fund. And guess what? Almost all the money went in near the top. Same thing with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, right? A lot of the money went in right at the top before things kind of took a tumble. And we're all for investing in the market, right? The more the merrier if you have a long enough time horizon. But the correction and the subsequent upward push, both of those things are just noise, right? And so investing regularly and dollar cost averaging are ways to hedge yourself from trying to time your entrance, which is going to lead to worse results overall. So
I don't know.
It's this trend following sort of approach that people tend to take. And the best thing to do is to kind of like put on your blinders and just keep doing the same thing you're supposed to be doing no matter what's happening with the market.
Sure, that's right. But maybe use this excitement to go ahead and invest like you would have otherwise.
Yeah.
There is a lot more attention on investing. And if you haven't done that yet, go ahead and get started. So speaking of investing, if you've got an HSA, a health savings account, actually investing those dollars for your future, not saving those dollars, investing those dollars, basically using it as a third retirement account of sorts, well, that's going to have a massive impact on your financial future. But the problem is most folks are still using their HSA like a savings account because maybe it's named that. So they're just following the directions on the label,
yeah.
Joel.
You can't blame them for it because the marketing's terrible.
Exactly. But they're using it like a savings account to pay for those healthcare expenses in the current year. And sure, that is going to provide a decent tax break, but it won't come even close to what it is that you can pull off if you put HSA dollars to work for you in the actual stock market. There's a new study, and they found that only 19% of folks use their HSA in this manner. It's sort of like putting a governor on a Ferrari, or like only using your Ferrari to like run to Aldi.
Yeah.
And it's capable of so much more.
Right, that's like one solid use, I guess. But if I had a Ferrari, I'd be doing so much more with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So we get that not everyone out there can afford to actually invest those dollars that you are needing to use those for some healthcare expenses. But we do eventually want you to invest those dollars. That should be the goal. And if you have plenty of cash on hand to pay for medical expenses out of pocket, we want you to think about investing your HSA dollars. It reminds me, I was talking to a buddy recently, and as we were talking, I remembered that this time last year, he reached out and was like, hey, between these two health insurance plans that my employer is offering, which one do you think I should get? And I noticed one of them had HDHP up at the top. It's a high deductible healthcare plan. And with that included the employer contributing $1,500 to his family's HSA. Did you know that?
Pretty sick.
That's an amazing perk.
A lot of employers will say $500 or $1,000.
$1,500.
That's amazing.
I could not believe it. And here's the kicker. I asked him about that. I was like, oh, by the way, I remember we were talking about this. Did you ever go ahead and join and choose that? And he said, well, actually, I thought I did, but I selected the wrong one.
Oh, no.
So I'm hoping he's going to remedy his ways.
Let's hope so.
This year. But basically, it's a sweet, sweet perk, and you're giving up free money when your employer, free money for future you, which means it's going to be even larger than $1,500 right now, again, were you to invest those dollars.
And again, I get that a huge percentage of people aren't doing it because most people don't know how powerful an HSA can be. That's why we're here to remind you it can be massively powerful.
Now you know.
Yeah, and we've got an article we'll link to in the show notes if you want to know exactly how to use and maximize your HSA if you have access to one. All right, let's talk about ADUs for a second, Matt. Accessory dwelling units. We talk about them regularly. They're this like, hey, you want to build a mother-in-law suite in your backyard? That's basically what an ADU is. And we've been fans for a while. I almost built one back at our in-town house. I was like this close, but there were just like some minor zoning issues where I couldn't get past them. But the
setbacks and whatnot.
That's right. Yeah. It was, so I was like, oh, it's gonna have to be in the center of the yard. No, I'm sorry, I'm not gonna do that. But often people are like interested, but it's too expensive, right? And they've been hard to finance, and then saving up something like $150K to build this thing, even if it's going to generate income, it's like it's a bridge too far. Most people aren't gonna be able to make it happen. But it's actually now getting easier to get a loan if you want to build an ADU, because before, lenders were not able to consider the potential rental income that could come from building that ADU, and now they can. So basically, if you're buying a house that currently has an ADU, the lender can factor in 75% of the likely rent amount into what they're willing to lend you to buy that house, which is cool because it might allow you to buy the house that's slightly more expensive with the ADU that's actually going to be better for your bottom line. And if you're trying to build a new ADU from scratch in your yard where you currently live, you can get a 203K construction loan, and a lender can consider 50% of the likely rental income of that ADU, what it's likely to bring in. So just good news for folks who have listened to us and they're like, I love the ADU thing, but I don't have 150K on hand to like build that thing from scratch. And yes, lending costs are higher. It's still not cheap to finance that ADU. But if you have enough cash to put towards that, and at the same time, you're able to borrow some in order to get it going, I think a lot of people are going to be more willing to go in the ADU direction now.
Totally. Yeah, it's good to know that that's an option. And this is great news because more states and municipalities out there are allowing ADU construction. They've kind of gained steam. They've gotten more popular. But the borrowing guidelines hadn't kept up with that demand, with that desire for folks to build those in their yards. ADUs are great for increasing housing supply. That's another benefit. But they can also be perfect for folks who are wanting to get into the real estate investing game. It's just like a good way to test the waters.
I feel like they're great for individuals. They're great for society as a whole. Like ADUs.
Great for cities.
Yeah, they're not like
looking to increase density.
Silver bullet or anything to reduce kind of the lack of housing supply we have, but they're part of the solution at least.
Exactly. Okay, so on the note of financing, lenders are now offering home buyers a free refinance perk. So this is a story in the Times. Basically, if rates go down within the near future, what you can do is you go back to that same lender and you can refi without paying the massive closing costs that are typically associated with doing a refinance. These programs are all different, so what we would recommend is to read the fine print, because some of these come with higher initial fees. Mm. And so if you are able to compare apples to apples and you see that there are not higher fees, then sweet. Obviously, go with the one that has the free option. It's like a free meal down the road. It's like a free night stay. Were you to come on back, as long as you're not paying more for that initial night stay.
Right, right.
But we think a better idea is just to do some more shopping and just find the lowest rates that are currently available. Certainly, it'll suck to pay to refi in the future if rates do drop, which they might. We've seen rates tick down over the past couple weeks. But hoping that one of these kind of gimmicky, maybe free refi mortgages will work out will likely cost you more, if in particular if you're paying more on the front end.
Yeah, or let's say it's like, oh, free refi in potentially at some point in the future, but it comes with an initial quarter point higher rate or something like that. Well, it's probably not worth that trade-off, right?
You end up moving and never actually refinancing.
That's right.
Before you end up selling that property.
That's right. And so we talk about this all the time, but there are stats out there about how if you just shop with at least three lenders, that's going to save you potentially thousands and thousands, or maybe even five digits plus over the life of your loan if you just shop around. Most people, a lot of folks, go to just one lender. They just get one quote, they go with that, and that is when you lose out the most, though.
Exactly. And another thing, I was talking to a friend, a local lender, and some banks are offering a free recast of their mortgage, which is nice if you're not able to come to the table with a bunch of money. But again, if they're charging you more for that ability to do a recast, then that's not something a recast is it's sort of like a refi, but they don't change the interest rate of your mortgage. They basically re-amortize it. So if you come to the table with some more money after the fact, it just reduces your monthly payment, which is nice for some
folks.
Like
an extra $100K or something like that.
Like after like after the sale of a house in a year that you decide to hang on to, it's like, okay, now let's take those funds that we were planning originally to funnel towards the new place. Now we have the ability to do that.
Yeah. And recasts don't get talked about much. Not many people use those, but yeah. It can be a great tool, I think, especially if you've got one of those higher interest rate mortgages right now and you do come into some cash. Recasting's not a bad idea for some folks. And speaking of debt, Matt, let's talk about credit card balances real quick. We've talked about how those balances have topped $1 trillion as kind of a headline number, but and we talked about how it's kind of not as bad as it seems, right? Because given inflation, given the amount of money in people's bank accounts, that net worths have gone up across the board. Is it a crummy stat? Do we hate to see it? Of course. But is it as bad as some people have made it seem? Not quite. And of course, we want to see everyone pay off their credit card debt on time and in full. That is one of our golden rules of plastic that talk about all the time. But just because the headline number isn't as bad as it seems, it doesn't mean that we're not seeing problems on the credit card front. Because it turns out that delinquency rates are up significantly. The average credit card balance is now more than $6,000, which is 15% higher than it was a year ago. I think people are relying on their credit cards more than they were. And some of that stimmy money, like we talked about, Matt, that's drying up. And so I think we're seeing an over-reliance on credit cards from a lot of folks. And you know, as everybody knows, credit card debt comes with a variable interest rate, and those rates have been increasing like clockwork. So, you know, we're still fans of credit cards if you use them the right way,
like in order to score the companion pass with Southwest.
Exactly.
For instance,
it's like, man, the perks can be massive, they can be significant,
sweet,
but credit card debt is bad through and through.
That's right.
It's gonna derail your personal finance goals for sure.
I think it can just be a slippery slope. Like, folks think, well, I'm just gonna go into debt a little bit, I'm not delinquent, I'm not behind on my payments, but what if I just make the minimum payment? What's the big deal? But it truly is a slippery slope. And once you start going down that path a little bit, it's going to keep you from achieving your different financial goals. Like, it makes me think about like snacking on candy. Like, it's been after Halloween now and we've got these tubs because we did the buyback, which we never circled back around. We ended up paying 10 cents per piece of candy and then 25 cents a quarter for the full size or the king size bars.
And I'll come in and pay 35 next year.
our kids walked away with anywhere from $3 or $4 for those that chose to keep a select stash on hand. So one of our daughters ended up selling all of her, like literally every single piece back and walked away with, I think, close to $10.
She does not have a sweet tooth?
She understood that. It doesn't mean that you weren't going to be able to have some candy at some point. It's just that it was more on our terms and the selection was going to be a little more limited.
Uh-huh.
Because, of course, mommy and daddy are going to get snacking and choose all the good ones. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here, is that when that stash of candy is there, I think, maybe I'll just snag one of those Almond Joys. What's the big deal? Maybe I'll take a Butterfinger to work. In fact, maybe I should take a bunch of them to work because it's nice to have some of these at work as well. But there's a mindset shift that takes place, and all of a sudden, subconsciously, I'm a snacker, man. Like, I'm eating candy left and right. When had I looked at, in this case, I guess my diet ahead of time, I would have said, well, no, I don't want to eat all of that candy. But there's like a shift that takes place when you start going down that path. And I think the same thing can be true when it comes to credit card use. You think, well, what's the big deal? But then after a couple months of maintaining a balance, you start thinking, well, I've already got the balance going. You know, what if we just add a few more hundred to it? And I think in my mind, like, that's where it starts getting a little dangerous.
I mean, I think
that's where your finances get derailed.
We kind of have the ability to rationalize almost anything.
Yeah.
And I think it's true in the case of something that's a great example, something as simple as Halloween candy. And if you're saying, like, how much candy do I think I want to eat in the month of October, or I guess really November?
Yeah.
The answer was probably for a lot of people, like, relatively little, you know, and it can get out of control really easily. So if you don't have hard and fast rules, hard lines in the sand about how you're going to use those credit cards, if you don't follow some of those rules that we lay out, then I think you're bound to find yourself in trouble down the road.
That's right. You're
bound to find yourself tied up in these like crummy statistics that are, you know, really what's lying behind those statistics is people who have harmed themselves financially significantly. It's hard to dig yourself out of that hole.
They've shot themselves in the foot, and not only are those statistics crummy, but you end up feeling crummy as well when you when you can't control yourself. And I think that's one of the takeaways, is just knowing yourself, because I think there's some folks who can use credit cards wisely. But in the same way, I think there are some folks who also know that I'm going to be too tempted to spend. Yeah. And for those folks, we would say, don't mess with the rewards. Don't even think about the companion pass. We don't want to highlight that too much to the detriment.
Same thing with booze, right? I mean, like, that is true. Like, some people are like, I can enjoy a glass of wine in moderation. You and I, we can enjoy a craft beer in moderation. But I know not everybody can do that. We have listeners who are like, hey, that's actually the toughest part of the show for me.
It's a struggle for me.
Yeah, which I totally get. Like, I realize that certain people are tempted differently towards different things.
Yeah, yeah. So keep that in mind. But, Joel, we've got more stories to get to. We're going to talk about, we will get to Dave Ramsey, but we have also got some updated numbers from the IRS on tax brackets and the standard deduction. We'll get to all of that right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, Matt, we're back. Let's keep this Friday flight rolling along. And
I thought you were going to say flying.
We can. But. Keep it. I should say that. Keep the Friday flight flying. But
flying high.
We are going to get to our ludicrous headline of the week. That's the first thing up in the second half of the Friday flight every week. This one comes from Think Advisor, and the title of the article is Super Nerds Unite Against Dave Ramsey's 8% Safe Withdrawal Rate Guidance. And I'm not sure if
this is kind of actually a good headline.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of times we would disagree with the headline, but the actual headline, we're kind of like, all right, yeah.
Well, we're
count us a part of those super nerds.
What we're kind of attempting to smack around here is the underlying advice that led to the creation of this article.
Exactly.
And if you're not on Twitter, I don't know. In my mind, Matt, this made all the rounds on Twitter. So I'm not sure if you saw it.
You mean X?
Yeah, X. Yeah.
When are you going to start calling it X?
I don't know. When he gets a better name, I guess, right? Twitter was such a good name. It's such a good branding. Yeah. X, not so much. Basically, what you, and I will say this too. We're not usually all about bashing other personal finance creators here, even if we don't agree with their information or their tactics. But in this case, we're going to make an exception. That's because, you know, Dave Ramsey, in some hubristic rant last week, told a caller that they can draw down 8% of their portfolio each and every year in retirement without running out of money, which is double with the super nerds in this article who refute what they claim, and really the studies have been around, Matt, that have done a lot of in-depth digging on this for decades. And so these super nerds say, oh, the 8% thing that Dave Ramsey is claiming, it's imprudent and it's reckless. Basically, Dave's math isn't mathing here. And his tactic, it fails more than 50% of the time when you run the numbers. And if folks are trying to plan out their retirement spending, right, if they were to listen to him, they can end up destitute. I see this as reckless. And I feel like Dave's done a lot of good work on the personal finance front for a lot of years. He's helped so many people. But man,
he's helped a lot of people get out of debt. Yeah. But it does not seem like he's helping a lot of people invest their dollars.
Some of that investing advice just is...
It stinks. It's no good.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So the authors of that article, they found, this is a quote here. A retiree who listened to Ramsey and followed an 8% withdrawal rule while holding a 4-fund stock portfolio in the 2000s, they would have run out of money in as little as 13 years. And that's because Dave Ramsey isn't taking into account what's known as sequence of returns risk. And so even though the market goes up most years, well, if you retire into a bear market and you continue to pull out 8% each and every year, you're eating into the capital significantly, more so than on years that are green, which means that you've got fewer dollars left to compound for your future. So the authors of this article noted, when you get a bad sequence of returns early in retirement, even good returns in subsequent years can't bail you out.
Yeah, if you retired, let's say, at the very beginning of last year, when the market had a rough year, that's a perfect example of how even a great year like this year can't make up for how harmful that first year was.
Exactly. So we feel that the super nerds in this case, they've got data on their side, data that Dave's prideful rants based on inaccurate information can't even overcome.
Yeah.
So having entered into the personal finance space via the Dave Ramsey gate, I'll go to bat for him a little bit, because further on in the article, or maybe it was the actual post of him when he was providing this advice, but he was talking about the fact that he says this is because he feels that it can be demoralizing for folks who are basically playing it too conservative. They feel that they need to actually have saved and invested much, much more money than what they currently do, and that there's a chance that they end up throwing in the towel. Maybe they even stop before they've even started, which I can completely sympathize with, right?
That's what we talked about recently when the Earn Your Leisure guys said, you need $10 million to be financially independent.
Last week. But so...
So I guess we do sometimes talk trash about personal finance. It's not our goal to do that, but...
But the problem, though, is when you are faced with an audience or somebody that you're trying to help with some hard information, you don't soften that by dangling or putting out some false hope out there. And I feel like that's what Dave is doing here. He's not being honest. He's not... Like, you need to be honest and provide folks with the data in a kind way, as opposed to being like, oh, it's going to be all right. That's what's so weird about this, is because when it comes to debt payoff, Dave is so hardline and crazy. He's incredibly disciplined about that. And that's kind of his shtick. But when it comes to investing, he's like, oh, it'll be fine. It's like this super ambiguous
nonchalant
gray area, which seems counter to how he is. When it comes to talking about the thing at least he's most known for, which is debt payoff.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me, like when it comes to debt, he's the dude that's willing to say, hey, you got some food in your teeth. Actually, he yells at you. He's like, hey, idiot, you got some food in your teeth. But when it comes to investing, he's afraid of being mean. Like, he's thinking, oh, let's just be nice to the folks because we don't want to hurt their feelings. That's the paradox here. Yeah. And that's the part that I don't understand.
And, you and I, we've talked about how the 4% rule, it's a rule of thumb. And actually, for a lot of retirees, like, I think you can withdraw more than that, a little bit closer to 5%, right? But again, you have to also be willing to pivot and be flexible in those retirement years. And in a down year, maybe say, have enough flexibility to say, listen, I'm going to withdraw a little bit less. And in a great year, you might be able to take out a little bit more. But just to say, patently, you can take out 8% from your retirement account, no matter what, every single year, like clockwork in retirement, well, you might be setting some people up for a cat food existence. And that...
Yes, which is... Yeah, that's like one of his... Or not one of his... Not cat food. I think he says like Alpo or like dog food, because that's what's going to happen with these folks.
Yeah.
Not the folks that don't get out of debt, but the folks who actually listen to
And nobody wants to eat cat food.
Investing advice.
I've seen it. It's gross. We have cats at home.
Okay, while we're talking about retirement, let's talk about Social Security, because another way retirees are shooting themselves in the foot is to tap those Social Security funds too early. There's a new retirement survey, and they found that fear over the future of Social Security, basically they think that it's running out of money, is causing boomers to sign up for that Social Security check now instead of waiting, even though waiting would mean a much bigger monthly check guaranteed down the road. And so that raises the question, I guess, first of all, is Social Security running out of money? Well, it kind of is, but it is extremely complicated. Like, basically, changes are going to need to be made in order to protect Social Security for future generations. And if they aren't made, well, benefit amounts will have to be cut to a certain extent. And even though politicians, they see this problem lurking, like it's on the horizon, they just haven't done anything to address it, meaning more drastic action is going to be necessary at some point.
Yeah.
But bottom line, it's not going to go away because, like, I think we can even look to our personal lives, right? Like, think about some time when you allowed a luxury to enter into your life, and before long, you start convincing yourself that that luxury is now a necessity.
Uh-huh.
And it's hard to claw back the money that is now going towards certain expenses. It's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Especially
in the same way, Social Security, man. Nobody's going to be willing to go out on the limb to be the bad guy and say, okay, no, we're not going to fund this entitlement anymore.
Right. You know, those tweaks are going to have to be made. But people who are in their 40s who say, I've been helping fund this scheme for 20 years. How, you're going to cut me out now?
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen. Like, that would, nobody's going to get elected on that platform.
Exactly.
And so we're confident that something's going to get done. And waiting longer, if you're in good health, makes the most sense, by the way, from a retirement income perspective, right? You don't necessarily want to bank on the fact that you can work longer because like injuries or other hurdles, lots of folks aren't able to work as long as they had hoped.
Stuff happens.
Yeah. But still, waiting to take Social Security, even just a couple of years longer, can make a massive difference in your retirement lifestyle by adding income, those extra couple of years that you worked, and ensuring a bigger monthly Social Security check
mm-hmm.
because you held off on actually claiming it. It's this double whammy that works in your favor, right? And so age 70 is where you reach that maximum payout. It's the ideal age for a whole lot of folks to claim that Social Security benefit. But a lot of these Social Security fears, Matt, are overblown too. And so, yeah, I think you and I were both concerned about political gridlock in D.C. I think anybody who cares about this country looks and sees just, I mean, gosh, think about the almost fist fight that went down in Congress this week. It's hard not to think that it's just a circus, a clown show up there lots of times. But in those things, the fact that we're focused on fist fighting people as opposed to actually, you know, getting legislation done, it prolongs the reforms that Social Security desperately needs. But I would still say, even while that's true, don't let the fear of Social Security going away cause you to claim early and harm your financial future. Like, for decades to come, diminishing your ability to retire on with a healthy Social Security check.
That's right, man. Okay, we had a really great conversation with Zeke Fox last week. We talked about the crazy world of crypto in light of the SBF ruling. We got some more crypto news for you. This came out this week from our favorite low-cost broker, or one of our favorite low-cost brokerages, I should say. But Vanguard, they won't be creating a crypto ETF. That's unlike their competitors over at Fidelity, over at BlackRock. CEO Tim Buckley, he said that, did you ever listen to Jeff Buckley back in the day?
Hallelujah.
Yeah, well, that's what he's known for.
Probably the only song I know.
I don't know. That just popped in my brain. Sorry. CEO Tim Buckley, not Jeff, he said that Bitcoin is not one of the asset classes that Vanguard focuses on because it is not part of a long-term portfolio. He actually said that he feels the same way about gold, which is actually interesting because we feel the same way. So maybe we've got more spiritual alignment with Vanguard than Fidelity. But Bitcoin, it's still one of the most interesting digital currencies out there, even though we see it more as like a speculative play rather than like a solid investment. But as always, if you want to dabble a little bit, make sure that you keep your exposure to a minimum. We're not going to hate.
Agreed. All right, let's talk about last subject of this Friday Flight Mail. Let's talk about giving. It's more on people's minds right now, this part of the season that we're entering, right? We're getting close to the end of the year. People are thinking about taxes, but they're also kind of thinking about generosity as we approach Thanksgiving and Christmas.
It's true.
And a quick update from the IRS, by the way. They just released the updated standard deduction for next year. It's going to be $29,200 if you're married filing jointly and $14,600 if you're single. The tax bracket income thresholds were increased as well. Not going to share all those numbers.
Bunch of numbers.
Doesn't go great on audio. But across the board, they were increased by just over 5%. And I know that most people don't decide what to give based purely around tax breaks and tax incentives, but it is important to note that a whole lot of people, we encourage you to give. We think it's a great thing. We're going to talk more about giving actually next week with one of the most interesting dudes in that space, Ellie Hassenfeld from GiveWell. But it's important to note that you're not going to get any sort of added tax benefit for giving if you're claiming that higher standard deduction.
Yeah, that's good news that the tax brackets have basically, the percentages haven't increased, but the income limits have increased. So bottom line, that means more of your income is protected from those higher rates of taxation. That's what we all want, is to pay less in taxes for the most part.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to be it for this Friday Flight. You can find the different articles and some of the resources that we mentioned during this episode up in the show notes at howtomoney.com, specifically the Southwest Companion Pass article.
Yeah, check it out.
We want folks to understand how that works.
Yeah. And don't forget to sign up for the How to Money newsletter if you haven't already. It's a joyous thing to get in your inbox every Tuesday. You can sign up at howtomoney.com/newsletter. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
There's two kinds of people in the world. People who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today. Health Aid Kombucha.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.